Welcome, Muse Hackers. You're listening to the Hack Your Muse podcast with Kelly McClymer. Our mission is to help you discover your muse and write what you want, when you want, and how you want. Today's guest is Allison Tugwell. Allison is an author and Austin-based certified professional life and business coach who partners with authors and entrepreneurs to go from overwhelmed to overcome with excitement to increase their impact and income online. She is an accountability coach with the Ask Method Company, founded by Ryan Levesque, number one best-selling author of Ask and Choose. She runs Flow Writers, a Facebook community that gets writers writing through live events, challenges, and accountability. Her time mastery for creatives, Her time mastery for creatives workshop transforms the way we value our time and realigns our schedules with what we want in life, not just in business, says one entrepreneur in attendance. This is the important part. Allison enjoys slam poetry, pure competition. Now I wish I edited things. Pun competitions and curating solo dance party playlists.
You got it. You nailed it, Kelly.
One more line though. Let me get that. Her work has been featured by CBS Austin, HuffPost, Thrive Global, and more. All right, Allison, welcome. I have to get to the slam poetry part first, so I'm sort of skipping my first question or delaying my first question about the writing muse to say, okay, exactly what is slam poetry?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Kelly. Slam poetry is really any kind of writing that lends itself to being heard. I don't know any other, the exact definition of it, but that's what it means to me.
And it's meant to be live performed, or it can also be read?
It is most impactful when it's live, I would say. Just the energy, just seeing the emotion in the author's face and their body language, everything that comes with a performance, I'd say, or just a really emotional interaction. But it can be read. And actually, that is one thing that kind of stops me from reading more and performing more of my poetry, is that I have trouble remembering my poems. And so a lot of times I read them. And I've reached out to other poets about this, being like, how do you, you know, look into the screen and deliver like that? And I had one poet write me back and was like, oh, you know, I just memorize them. Like, it just like comes through me. And I was like, oh, great. But, so that is like, you know, I don't have a ton of my poems that are out there on video, or I think that's really, though, it stops me from performing it more often, is that the reading part of it. So yeah.
So that's interesting. So I, you know, always think about using a teleprompter and doing it on the computer, because that's a good way. If you can't remember, I can't remember anything. I need my teleprompter. And even with my teleprompter, I mess up. All right. So you're a little bit different of an author than we've had on the podcast. So far, we've been talking to mainly fiction authors and nonfiction authors, and poetry is a completely different animal. But I actually feel like poetry is closer to the muse, in my opinion. So here's the first question I ask everybody. What do you think when you think of a writing muse? Mm. The concept itself.
Yeah. The first thought that comes to my mind, Kelly, is really tapping into that inner child inside of us. Yeah, I think of when I first just had all of these emotions in me as I'm growing up and adolescence. And that was how I processed my, all of these big, sometimes scary desires, these feelings that cropped up within me and needed an outlet. And that was the healthiest and almost like the only way that I knew how to process. And so, you know, you return back to that place when you're feeling these emotions and tapping into those emotions that come through you when you write. And that's when you can really, really connect with that inner child, that inner expressive being within you that needs to be heard, that needs to be acknowledged. That's what I would say.
So I usually give my own take on the muse a little bit to get your reaction to that. So I've always felt like I had a muse, and I think as a poet, you probably feel this too. It's like the poem or the story or the words start to just sort of come, and you're kind of off on your own little island. Everything else fades away. Mm. And that's kind of when I feel like the muse is coming through me. I'll sort of quote unquote wake up, you know, an hour or so later and be like, oh, I just wrote all of that. And look, I'm back in my living room, not where I thought I was. So poems are shorter, I think. So I wonder if it's a more intense kind of a feeling. But also the other part that I've just started to recognize as I've been thinking about the muse more is that a lot of what we're processing comes from our subconscious. Our lizard brain that we don't actually really ever notice is controlling us. Things that we fear, but we don't even recognize, oh, we did that because we were afraid, but the fear never actually got up to our consciousness because we just quietly did something and didn't do it. And I think that for writers, we dive down in there and start to play with those things with our muse. And I think that's where our muse lives. But I also think, you know, it has its dark side because it can also stop us from writing because we're afraid and we're playing in there and start to get, a little bit scared of all the stuff we're looking at. And I know a lot of friends who write, you know, really dark suspense type novels. So I'm assuming as a poet, you're not that dark, but I don't know, because I have read some really dark poetry. So I don't know if you want to read your poem first or have a reaction to what I just said about what I think about the muse.
I actually have a question that brought up for me. I think it's really interesting the way that you are approach working with writers and approach your own writing and kind of identifying and tapping into this muse. It's really cool. And my question is really that place where the writing comes through, the muse, is that the same place where the voices that stop you also come through? Or is that a different beast, if you will?
Well, so that's a really interesting question. And I think it can be both. Sometimes, like you're saying, when you're playing with a muse, you're just busy having fun. You know how children don't notice anything except what they're focused on. And so when you're having a great idea and you're feeling great about it, there's no fear getting in your way. But the minute you have a doubt or someone says something unkind to you, like, why don't you get a job instead of trying to make money writing? There are so many cruel things that can be said to writers that people don't actually mean cruelly. That's when those fears start to really interfere with the creative process. And I have never met a creative person who doesn't struggle with that from time to time. Some people are much better at separating the play off and just not letting anything interfere with it. But I do kind of think it's the same, you know, it comes from the same place. It's just like if you're making mud pies, on the side of a road. I don't know if kids do that anymore. I used to do that. My mother said I was the neatest mud pie maker in the world. And if you're making the mud pies, you're going to pick the right mud. You're going to try not to pick the mud that, you know, has some poop in it and smells bad or whatever. So when you're really fully playing with that good mud, you don't have the same, you just don't have the same
texture.
Texture is perfect. Exactly. Or smell. It's all those sensory things.
Yeah. I think it all gets woven in there. I think that that's what.
But that's an interesting question. So, because I really feel like with poets, you're so much closer to the muse because you're going at the word level. I mean, and you're using, you're not tied to the grammatical structure of sentences and paragraphs and scenes and chapters. And you can make that heart connection with a listener or a reader in three words. It might take, you know, a short story writer 2 pages to do. So I do wonder if that helps you stay in the play mode more, or if it makes it harder and more susceptible to that, oh, this just isn't good enough mode.
Oh, yeah. Well, and when you said that, I just was reminded one of my favorite poems, and is from a poet, Naira Waid is her name. And
put that in the show notes and spell it for you.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, right. She's got a great Instagram following. And one of my favorite poems of hers is just, "I have always been the woman of my dreams." That's it.
Oh, I've got to go find that.
Right?
I love it.
And I have her book, Salt. I just have I have it marked, and I have kind of a word or two that kind of reminds me of the poem. But oh my gosh, just like you said, it just sometimes it's just one line, and that's all it needs to be.
And it just gets you.
Yes.
Now that's from the reading side, but what about from the creation side? Do you feel like you have to strive, or do you feel like you just kind of open yourself up? How does that work?
The thing is, poetry is great for attention deficit disorder sufferers, right? So we can kind of get in and I get out. Like I'm in it, something will come through me. I woke up the other day with this in the middle of the night, a lot of times where it happens, where I'm like, "Are you mad at music for making you play?" And that was just like that one line. I'm like, that's all it is. That's it. And I'm done. And I can go back to bed and I'm done, right? And so that sometimes you can just jump in and out, and that feels really good. But then again, I have all of these poems in my Evernote, and I don't quite know exactly where they fit in the public eye. And so sometimes they just stay, you know, in your digital journal.
Yeah, yeah. With poetry is that there's just not the same market for it as there is for stories. Like people who write stories tend to know kind of what to do with them.
Yeah, and when it's done, right? Like with fiction, you've got a beginning and there's a story arc, and then there's a conclusion, and there's of course there's ways and so many creative ways that fiction authors and are playing with that.
You're right. There's a much more defined structure than for a poet.
Yeah, but like, how do you know when it's done? I don't know. I don't have that answer, unfortunately. But just, I think that there's a place where you get to where just fussing with it anymore
isn't. You can mess it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do that with stories too, but I would think it would be even more devastating for poetry.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is something that I've struggled with too. When is it done? Yeah.
All right.
And so being able to walk away.
So I don't know how many people who listen are going to be familiar with modern poetry or modern poets. So you've agreed to read one of your poems, and I'm kind of excited to hear you do that.
Me too. Okay. This one's called Alive Lines. Writers are alive. They wake, eat, excrete, sleep, repeat. That's obvious, right? I'm not going to earn a Pulitzer for pulling that zinger out of my prize of a mind. But not everything living is aware of that fact, and I believe that it holds us all back to not acknowledge the edges of what we feel. And still, we steal the moments of flow when we're unaware of anything but what's moving to and through us, making and baking to our heart's content, till the timer chimes. The clock striking is more important than our inspiration as far as creation is concerned. As are walls to block the stalling or crack the writer's block. But get this, blocks are a myth, Mr. and Miss. Don't get pissed if your muse doesn't choose you. You choose to move your mouth when you chew, don't you? Same with your fingers when you type out your message to someone who sees, desymbolizes, empathizes, nods, and rises to the occasion to care and share. Isn't that why we're here? Wake, eat, excrete, sleep, repeat. When I say eat, I mean eat your heart out for your art. When I say excrete, I mean take a seat and start to write. Don't fight or fear it. Just let go and let the words roll and flow like lava. Love this life you're living, the gift you're giving by sharing your truth through your trigger fingers. Bang it out. Be on the fringe. Fry something up silly and sizzling and serve yourself a first draft straight from the tap, tap, tap of your MacBook Pro. The professionals know the taste of brain dumplings, licking the glaze of malaise off, but do not stop. Whatever you do, make the time to rhyme, to play, to piddle and type, to scrawl letters on a page for days. Return to it. Make a rhyme, make the time to put yourself out there. Feed your need for value. Value in, value out. What you put inside your brain becomes your refrain. Don't abstain from sounds and sights that make your heart bright and big. Make friends with the never end till the bitter end, till the deadline. You are writing your alive lines. So wake, eat, excrete, sleep, repeat.
Oh, very nice and very apropos for this discussion.
Thank you.
Oh, I love it. Some really good words, which I was like, oh, I want to remember that. I should have written it down. Some of the phrases that the, what did you call the fingers?
Oh,
I want to say juggernaut, and that's not right. But you had a really good phrase for that.
When you, your fingers, when you type out your message.
Yes.
Someone who sees, desymbolizes, empathizes, nods, and rises to the occasion to care and share.
Very, very nice. Very nice. I love that one.
Or trigger fingers, bang it out. I think I said that too.
Yeah, you did say trigger fingers, bang it out, but it doesn't matter. That was the one I was thinking of, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to put you on the spot for it. It's like I wanted to remember it and then I got lost in the other part of it. Because that's sometimes what it feels like, trigger fingers banging out the story. I love it. I love it.
Thank
yes.
you.
I'm so glad you were willing to share that with us.
Thank you for asking.
My next question after we discuss the muse is about the first time you sat down to write a story. Now, I know you're writing a book and I know you've written poetry. Have you ever written a story, just a, you know, fiction for school or anything?
Oh yeah, countless. A lot of stories, yeah.
Okay, so do you remember the first time that you decided, hey, I want to be a writer? I know you have some experiences when you were younger where you actually got published, which is a good story. But did you think you wanted to be a writer when you did that? When you wrote that and got it published?
I did. I didn't have, at the time, I didn't have a lot of older people in my life that I could look to as a role model for that were writing. So I didn't know what was possible in terms of a career. All I knew is that I just loved to write, that that's how I expressed myself. And I pretty much kept it, to myself.
So when you were 13, that's mm-hmm. when you wrote this. So, what made you sit and write it? Just, you said processing, right?
Yeah, we were learning about sonnets and Shakespeare in our English class, and I wrote one about the seasons. And so each season had a stanza, and I don't know how we ran across it, but my parents and I found a publication that were taking submissions and from
Wait, you're skipping something.
Oh, am I?
Yes. So you wrote this for school, and then you really liked it. Did the teacher say something to you? Or, I mean, how did your parents get wind of it?
I can't quite recall. I've always had, with the exception of one instructor in college, I've always had very encouraging English teachers. And so
that's good.
Yeah. That have always kind of supported my writing and whatever we were doing. And of course, I was always an enthusiastic participant in class. So that always helps. Like that's the subject that really spoke to me.
Yes, that does help.
Yeah. So I think that was part of it, is just how excited I was.
But that whole leap of getting it published, I mean, that's really not a usual leap. So
I've forgotten about it too, Kelly. Like, it's so funny that when we were first talking, I was like, actually I was published. Like, but I just didn't talk about it. I didn't run in circles with other writers. I didn't know many other people that wrote the kind of way that I wrote. And so it was a little lonely. I almost had this like relationship that I kept from the world with writing. And
poetry is hard for people to understand. It really is. It's a different kind of writing. But I also think one of the reasons why people shy away from it is because it is deeply emotional at times. I mean, it makes that heart connection. A good poem is gonna get you right there. In many different ways. So I can kind of see why you'd keep it secret. Although I guess really when you're a teenager, you keep a lot of what you're doing secret, but apparently your parents found out enough about it to help you get it published. So that was kind of exciting.
Yeah. That was cool of them. They've always supported me, even though it's always very different from their life path. They're like, you do you, girl.
That is a nice thing for parents to do.
Exactly.
All right. So the whole point of the Hack Your Muse podcast is kind of to collect all of the very interesting hacks that people have when they want to write, but they're feeling avoidant. Now, I'm going to guess that for poetry, you actually need to listen to that want, don't want really strongly, because I would think it would be difficult to write a poem when you just aren't in sync with your muse. So I know you're writing a book and I know you've written blogs. So let's talk more about prosaic writing and what your hack would be for something like that. Like if you have a blog you want to write and you're just like, oh, I just can't bear it. What's your hack for that?
Yeah. So one thing that I like to recommend before someone actually just like commits themselves to a regular writing habit is just really tapping into being aware of your emotions throughout the day.
Ooh, that's good. I like that.
And so I have kind of an emotion tracker. It's really simple. It's a Google Doc, and you kind of check in with yourself on a daily basis, and you just say, you know, like, what am I feeling? Kind of name the emotion. What's happening at the time? What time of day is it? And then any thoughts or ruminations that come to you that are accompanied with that emotion. And I've used this with a couple different clients before. It's kind of like the first step. Like if they want to actually like work together in terms of writing their book or what have you, I'm like, all right, like go through, see what emotions are coming up for you, see what actually compels you to write throughout the week, and come back to me and let me know what you found about yourself. So I think the first step is really tapping into you, recognizing your own circadian rhythms and what kind of gets you going, because that's really at the heart, especially with poetry, is, like you said, you nailed it, like that emotion is so strong. That's what makes a poem great, is moving someone. So tapping into those rhythms.
That's a really good hack. I haven't heard that one before in exactly that way. But because it's more of a whole body kind of attention, it's like, okay, so when am I really going to be able to pull everything together and do this writing focus and really be committed to it? That's a nice way to look at it. I like it. Does it tend to work for all of your clients, or do you find that some of them do better with it than others?
Yeah, so this is for someone that doesn't yet have a consistent writing practice that has worked for them. And so it's really just getting them reacquainted to what's moving within them that they need to get out. So that's really the first step.
Yeah, I would imagine it would work also for someone whose practice has changed, because, I've been writing for 40 years and my practice changes, often depending on what else is going on in my life. Because, and I never thought about, why that was, but it probably does have something to do with what's actually going on in my body, and my feelings and all of that is changing because things are different at different times of the day. So yeah, I could see that being really useful. That's okay. So this is really great. So I think I've probably kept you long enough, Allison. This has been really terrific. So I need to let you tell people where they can find Allison Tuckwell online. And I know you have a really great group that you are an excellent, what would you call it? I don't want to call it moderator because that's not enthusiastic enough. Leader in.
I like to call myself a cheerleader.
Okay, that's good. And that's very appropriate.
Yeah, that's one of my superpowers for sure. What I'll say is, so two places. If you want a free mind map for how to get your book published blueprint, you can go to bit.ly/getmybookpublishedblueprint.
Nice. And we will put it in the show notes.
Great. And then for the Facebook group, Flow Writers, if you want an accountability group to get yourself writing, hear from other writers like Kelly who joined, which I'm psyched about, because
I think
you're probably the most seasoned writer in that group. So I was just like, yes, Kelly. It's for fiction, it's for nonfiction, for anyone that really just kind of wants some accountability around writing and have a discussion place for that. And that's just FLOWRITERS. If you look for it on Facebook, or it's facebook.com/group/flowwriters.
And we will put that in the show notes too. So yeah, no, that's a really fun group. I really like the way you lead that with just interesting questions, and you get everyone, active and interested and sharing. That's the danger of Facebook. It's also the good point of Facebook.
Yeah, I live in my groups. That's the only thing I do. I actually have a thing, Kelly, that pops up. It's a Facebook newsfeed eradicator.
Oh, that's
such a good Facebook hack. And instead of the newsfeed, when you see on your main site, there's just a Zen quote.
Oh, I need that.
Yeah, just Google Facebook newsfeed eradicator, and it's a plugin for your browser.
But then how do I see the pictures of my grandchildren?
There you go. I don't think you'd need to see that in your news. I think that you could just look them up and
it could be self-directed. Yeah. That's a good point.
Exactly. And it's only, because I basically only live in my Facebook groups.
That's very smart. That's a really good hack. We weren't even looking for a Facebook hack. But it's
got all the hacks.
Creativity hack, because it keeps you from being distracted, right?
Absolutely.
I might put that in the show notes too, a link to that.
good.
Okay, that's all for this episode, Muse Hackers. Stay tuned for more Muse Hacking Wisdom next week. Okay, Muse Hackers, it's commercial time. If you love this podcast and want to support it with real dollars and cents, I have the perfect course for you on Teachable. Meet Your Muse is a mini course that will show you how to unleash the power of your muse while at the same time reining in some of her most creativity-crushing bad habits. If you spend more time thinking about writing than actually writing, Meet Your Muse can help you turn that around. Once you've met your muse, you will have the keys to creating the most productive writing sessions ever, even if you only have 10 minutes a day to write. Remember, one page a day, 250 words, equals 364 pages, 90,000 words. That could be two short books or one good-sized book, or five or six or more short stories, articles, or blog posts. Isn't that worth $20 and 2 hours or less of your time? Best part, you will be supporting this podcast to continue seeking out the best muse hacking writers around and sharing that wisdom with you for free. To sign up for Meet Your Muse, go to hack-your-muse.teachable.com. That's hack-your-muse.teachable.com. Thanks. See you next week.